Welcome to the Crazy Wisdom Podcast. This podcast is for you if you have an insane drive to find the truth of things. It's not the good answers that we seek, but the good questions. I interview a range of different guests from many different fields, all with the intention to uncover the simple truths that are hidden in plain sight. Most people don't want to go there. I go there. My guests go there, and you benefit. Please let me know if you enjoy these episodes, and as always, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to the podcast. Welcome to the Crazy Wisdom Podcast. My guest today is David Pope. He is CPA, CGMA, Commissioner, Stable Token Commission, and he's the governor's liaison to the Wyoming Stable Token Commission. We tried recording a podcast many years ago, but we had connection difficulties, and we're doing it again, and we're really excited about it because now it's a bear market and everybody stopped paying attention to crypto, and those are the times where it's the most interesting stuff is happening, and it sounds like some interesting stuff's happening in Wyoming. So welcome to the show, and feel free to give that disclaimer that we discussed.
Thank you, Stuart. I'm just really happy that we have a chance to continue here. The first thing I need to say is that nothing I say here reflects the opinions or the voice of the Wyoming Stable Token Commission or the Wyoming Select Committee on Blockchain. That all views expressed are my own, and none of it is accounting or legal advice.
Cool. Yeah, thank you so much. This is going to be fun. So what's going on in Wyoming right now?
Well, last legislative session, which was the first quarter of 2023, the legislature passed the Wyoming Stable Token Act, which doesn't regulate stable token as it might sound. What it does is it allows Wyoming to create its own stable token. And we've been trying to do this for a couple of years now. The first time it passed was in 2022, and the governor vetoed it. And this last time he allowed it to go into effect without a veto. And so we are charging forward on creating the Wyoming stable token.
That's crazy. What does a stable token do for a state or people within the state or people within outside the state?
Well, as you know, this stable token is pegged to some sort of monetary value. What Wyoming will be doing is for every stable token it creates and puts into circulation, it will either have $1 in cash or $1 in U.S. Treasuries to back it at all times. So it'll be pegged to the U.S. dollar, and it will allow for very fast international transactions and settlements, which I don't know if you know this, but the normal settlement time with an international transaction going through what's known as the SWIFT system is several days, the actual settlement. Wow. People look at their bank statements and believe that it happens really quickly, but behind the scenes, it takes days to get the money from the U.S. to a foreign country or vice versa.
That is
and to continue with the second part of your question, what it does for the state of Wyoming is it provides the state of Wyoming investable capital, because just like when someone receives a dollar, that dollar doesn't get any sort of return. When we buy a treasury, a T-bill or any sort of treasury bond to back that, the state will get to keep the interest earned and all of the investment returns on that in order to be able to pay for providing that service to people.
So that's really cool. I had no idea that this was happening. And that's very exciting because it essentially, I've been using stablecoins for the first time in my life for actual purposes, because I'm down here in Buenos Aires and it's one of the best, quickest ways to get pesos. And so it's the real first use case that I've ever had. And it's so funny because it has nothing to do with Bitcoin. It has nothing to do, barely has anything to do with Ethereum. It more has something to do with Tron. USDT on the Tron network is the preferred accepted ways that everybody down here accepts USD stablecoins. And so I've been finding out all these things about what it means to use stablecoins. And the one thing I've learned is that the Ethereum blockchain is a horrible, horrible way to transmit value, because you're getting so, like, this is partly because I'm American and because Coinbase is basically the only on-ramp and off-ramp, but I'm getting hit with fees on Coinbase. I'm getting hit with another fee with Coinbase. Then I get another fee for transferring the USDT over the Ethereum blockchain, because the Ethereum blockchain is the one that's the Coinbase is using. I can't get on Tron because I'm not on Binance, and I can't get on Binance because it's you know, not that easy as the US citizen. And so it's just really interesting. And I love the idea of having a Wyoming stablecoin. And it seems like Wyoming is looking very far in the future. It does feel like that's a very cool thing for Wyoming to have in order to generate revenue, as you were talking about. How do you think it will work in terms of buying that stablecoin? Will there be a lot of regulations around that? How will that work?
Well, you spoke a little bit about USDT, and there are a number of stable tokens out there, or stable coins out there right now. And those are all wonderful use cases. The issue is there's very little regulation over them.
Yeah.
Over the past 2 years, some of the major ones were in danger of depegging because of some of the fluctuations in the U.S. Treasury rates, some of the economic factors. With Wyoming's, and this is what our competitive advantage will be, is that statutorily we will be required to maintain at least, I think the statute says, 102% backing at all times, and then with that kind of guardrail around it, we are planning a token that never depegs. So that's the competitive advantage. The regulations around it, as I said, there's very little regulation around, especially like Tether and USDT and USDC right now. And there are certain things that states can do that private companies can't do. And that's the other thing we are counting on, is that we'll be able to create a system that won't be depegged, that will be, so in essence, will be more solid and more robust than the other stable tokens. And we will be able to do it in a manner that, I don't know what your thoughts are about fiat currencies going digital and the privacy factor around that, but we will be able to create a token that maintains the privacy of the individual using it. Even though when you purchase it off an exchange, you'll have to go through their on-ramps. There will be the KYC and the AML tests and all of that. But then once you have it, it becomes very difficult for a federal government to, I don't want to say monitor it, because on a blockchain it's always monitored, but to really say, no, you can't spend it on what you want to spend it on. That's one of our goals as well, is to be able to maintain that ease of use and privacy.
That's super interesting. So essentially permissionless. And I love it. I love our system in the United States with the federal system, the fact that it's federalized. So you have the nation, and then you have the national government, then you have the state government. And I love it that Wyoming is doing what it's doing, because that, you know, it's the laboratory of democracy. And I'm really excited to see that. How do you think, like, because the national government does have sort of a way to lean on states, right? Like, and how will that work? Do you think the national government will be hostile to what Wyoming does?
We don't anticipate that they'll be friendly. I think they will see if there is a way that it can be stopped. Constitutionally, Wyoming can't have its own currency. And that's that's a fact. And we're not trying to have our own currency, and nobody should even think about that. What we are doing is we are creating a better distribution method for the actual dollar, as opposed to having our own quote unquote dollar. I'm not a constitutional law expert or anything like that, but I don't know that we're going to get a friendly reception when we finally roll it out, but we're trying to design it in a way in which it will be difficult for the federal government to stop us. I don't know that for a fact. They might say, wow, this is the system we've been looking for to help the help international settlements. But I just, something in me says that the federal government will want to hold and keep as much power as possible.
Which is so interesting. I feel like I should go get a constitutional law, because there's also other things going on right now that are related to this very subject that I'm not tracking very closely, because now I'm sort of lost in South America, which is actually very, very nice. I like being sort of very far away from everything all the craziness that's going on. Let's take the conversation to Bitcoin. Is there anything going on at the state level or that you're finding interesting at the private level or in entrepreneurship circles in terms of Bitcoin adoption inside of Wyoming?
Wyoming, I think privately you and I have talked quite a number of times. Wyoming has been kind of a laboratory for the legal adoption of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. Back in 2017, we started the Wyoming Blockchain Coalition, which to date we've passed probably close to 35 statutes related to the legal treatment of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. And how it's transferred in an estate, how it's legal attachments to it. One of our bills was that you can't be forced to give up your private keys in a Wyoming court unless specific circumstances are met. So it's something that is that Wyoming has really dove head first into. That's nothing new for Wyoming. If you look up just on the web, do a search on Wyoming firsts, there's an incredible list of those. One of those being, we created the limited liability company, which has been which is now the most popular form of organization as a setup for small business. And not only that, but that we were instrumental in the fight against the IRS for 21 years before it was recognized on the federal level.
Wow.
And that's the type of commitment that we have to individuality, privacy, and small business. Then as part of what we did in 2018 was we created the special purpose depository bank, the Speedy Bank. That's one that it particularly applies to crypto type businesses because it will bank those, but really can be used by any industry that is being debanked because they are politically out of fashion. You know, I don't know if you remember in 2013, Operation Choke Point, I think is what it was called. If not, you should look it up.
Yeah.
What the federal government did was it identified something like 15 different industries that it didn't like. They were perfectly legal industries, and they used the FDIC then to pressure banks to debank those industries. So while everyone says a speedy bank is specifically made for the crypto industry, I believe it's something that can be used for all industries that are out of political favor. So that's Wyoming. That's what we've been doing to aid the adoption of digital assets.
That's so cool. Because as we know, over the past few years, it's gotten to the point where it's like now undeniable that the national governments are now making decisions that are outside the bounds of their scope. My interpretation is outside the bounds of their scope in order to go after political groups. For example, the truckers in Canada, in Britain, there's a lot of stuff that happened over the past few years, and it's just like so clear at this point that that's happening. One of the things that I'm most excited about in this new world, although I definitely don't think we're headed for a utopia, is just like, I think it was Balaji Srinivasan, I can't pronounce his last name, but Balaji was talking about how, you know, we've got these regulations at the national level that are trying to stop all these different things, some of which are politically motivated, some of which actually probably makes sense to regulate, but they're trying to stop all these things. And then, but they try to, you know, block the door, and then the thing will just come through the window. Because technology is such a powerful way to something about the virtual world and the internet and technology and the way that information is just free and wants to be free, it just kind of like and they block the window and then it comes through the venting duct or whatever, and it's like there's no way to really stop what's about to happen, in my opinion. And it's really interesting. I do think that Wyoming is going to play a role in this. So the special purpose bank, can we talk more about that? Is the IRS in the same way that they were going after the LLC? Are they going after these special purpose banks in that same way?
No, it's the Fed that's throwing up the roadblock to those. Right now, there's a lawsuit for one of the banks is winding through the system because the Fed did not give them a master account, the lawsuit is based around the fact that they did it improperly. They did it for political purposes as opposed to some sort of flaw in the plan, in the banking plan. But the speedies are state chartered banks. They have a full state charter. They cannot loan money. They have to have 100% reserves all the time. And so they are extraordinarily safe banks. And there is really no reason that there should be any sort of block against them beginning Fed accounts.
Okay, that's really
so. And I think to your earlier point, the fun image that I have always of not shutting the door and coming in the window, but in your hand, if you pour water in your hand, the tighter you try and clasp, the more water is pushed out and the more it escapes. So I think that's what we're seeing with technology right now. If you shut one door, another window opens. It's impossible to contain.
Yeah, and very exciting. And I love it that Wyoming is doing all this stuff. Anything else? Because I do want to talk about some other things that we talked about before going in. Anything else my listeners should be aware of in terms of the innovative way that Wyoming is thinking about leveraging states' rights to create sort of a safe haven for this important technology?
Well, once we get through the initial rollout of the stable token, then that just think of the doors that opens up. What can you do with a stable token, or kind of like a petrodollar, or, you know, and there are no plans. I have to put this out right now because I tend to get ahead of myself on this, and this is me talking, but there are no plans for the state to leverage any of its mineral resources, which are impressive, leverage any of those digitally. But if we are able to accomplish the stable token, then that hopefully opens the door to really a lot of other innovative use cases for the state. And by the way, all of the excess funds that are generated as far as investment returns on the stable token go to actual, you know, to fund the schools in Wyoming, fund the infrastructure in Wyoming, to do things that we may not normally be able to do as far as providing services.
That's really cool. So it makes me more and more interested in, because I have some property in California, but California is no longer my like home, basically. It's where I have a property and stuff like that. But the more and more I think about it, the more I want to move to either Wyoming or Nevada or South Dakota or somewhere out like that. But the more you talk about Wyoming, the more I'm interested in choosing that as my kind of home base in the US. And are there any advantages as an LLC? Because most people go to Delaware. What do you think about like forming a business in Wyoming? Is it a good state to do that in?
Well, I believe the last statistics show that more LLCs are formed in Wyoming than any other state. That's the first thing. Second thing is Wyoming is consistently rated either number one or number two in the nation as a place to form a business. And that's by both the Tax Foundation and a number of other completely independent resources. And so that's the heart of it right there. And as you know, with an LLC, you can choose how it's taxed. So, you know, in some ways, if you're not a resident, you can have it taxed as a corporation. And then all of the income is considered to be Wyoming income. In many cases, there are things you can do to kind of mess that up. But that is that's a consideration as well. Wyoming, the lowest taxed business state, lowest overall taxes in the nation. So lots of reasons to be here. And, you know, the eastern plains of Wyoming aren't picturesque, let's put it that way. And we have a lot of wind. But once you get to the north and west part of the state, it is gorgeous here. The infrastructure is still, as far as the ability to get places by air, it's not horrible, but it's not great. Infrastructure as far as internet capabilities and gigabyte abilities, they're wonderful in most places because a couple of governors ago made it his priority to have this huge pipeline of fiber go through both Interstate 80, along Interstate 80, and along Interstate 25, which both join in Cheyenne. And so what that did is it gave access to people to huge amounts of capability with internet.
That's really interesting. I'm looking at a map right now. So 80 goes east to west or west to east, and 25 goes north to south and south to north. And yeah, that's really interesting. So There was a question I had, but I've forgotten it now. Before we started talking, you were talking about horses. I'm gonna start taking a lesson in polo down here in Buenos Aires because it's one of the number one polo places. But the last time I was on a horse, it was quite an interesting adventure because the horse had like an attention deficit disorder thing that clashed with my attention deficit disorder, and like I was with a bunch of people, and it just like took off underneath me, and I almost fell off many times. And so I'm like somewhat nervous, and I'm wondering, it seems like you have a special connection with horses. Are there any tips for how to understand, like, well, what's your take on the relationship between a human and between a horse?
There are people that approach that differently. It's different for every person. I myself am not a horse person by my upbringing. My wife used to show American Saddlebreds, and she competed in the Saddlebred National Championship one year. So we have a small horse rescue that we run. We have a couple of retired American Saddlebreds that I don't ride. I work them, and do everything. We have a trainer that comes over, but the big thing I've found in the way I approach it is you have to know that you are dealing with a prey animal, and a herd. So what they approach everything with is, are you going to kill me? And are you going to hurt me? Are you going to kill me? That's their mental outlook. And they're also a herd animal. So if you're going to have a horse, you should probably have two horses, at the very least. Then once you understand that most of their reactions come from a place of fear, mm-hmm. or a need and desire to run away, then you can do things like make sure they know where you are at all times, so that you're not startled. You make sure and approach them with kindness, and get them used to you as a person. Two ways to do that. Make sure you're the one that feeds them all the time, and make sure you're the one that grooms them all the time. And then, usually you can, there are a lot of horses then that you can deal with. I would not be a good horse trainer, because there you have to use a lot more advanced techniques to really get to know your horse and to get them comfortable with you. But these, I love working with the horses. I love working with our dogs and cats. But once you understand what is motivating any creature, then you can learn to work within those boundaries to help that animal live a good life.
That's cool. I really like that. So when I was hearing you talk about the horses and being a prey animal and being a social animal, I was starting to think about human beings as well, and whether we fit into that prey thing, because it's like we're the alpha species of the world, obviously, now, because we fit into groups. But because we fit into groups, there's so many inner layers between different people and such. I guess, like, what the question is, where would you put humans in that predator versus prey thing? And how are humans, like, what can we learn about humans from horses?
Oh, I think there's, we're getting a lot into philosophy now, and I love this, because I've read enough to make me dangerous on it, but, from what I understand, our brains are still very, very old when it comes to evolution. And again, we look at our baser instincts. Look at can I eat you? Can or are you going to try and eat me? Should I run? Should I stand and fight? Should I, you know? And so when you're dealing with other people, and you see this a lot in management concepts, management leadership concepts, when you're dealing with other people, the biggest goal is to, again, make sure you know what motivates them. And first thing you ask yourself, and which you do inside, whether you know it or not, the first thing you ask yourself is this a person that I can work with? Number one, is this a person that that will fit within my sphere of influence? And if they are, then you figure out what motivates them, how to feed that motivation, how to help them to become really what they want to be. And if you can do that, then you can lead a person, and you can lead just about anybody. I keep telling, the accounting industry right now has this huge talent shortage, and the industry just can't keep people in it. But if you can figure out how to do that, you can. I tell everyone, give me someone that's motivated, give me someone that wants to better themselves. I can train them to be an accountant. You know, that training is just something that is so that's so personal that you can do. Then you can help them to take that wherever they want to go. I love the accounting profession because of what it's allowed me to do. And I think that can be true for a whole bunch of other people. I don't even think you necessarily need a full college degree to be a good accountant. You just need to have the motivation to learn, and then I'm happy to teach.
Okay, I really loved what you said about managing other people and motivation, and that feels really solid and an integrous form of motivation, of like finding out how to give people what they want. And then there's also giving people what they need as well. And that's an interesting topic of discussion. But the real thing I wanted to ask you is that's with a sort of employer-employee relationship. How do you manage partnerships relationships? What's your take on partnerships?
Partnerships as in business partnerships, yeah. Or
as okay. In business. I mean, yeah, there's other personal could also apply, and there's interesting similarities and differences between business, but right now the business one is the most interesting for me.
I think having a true partnership with someone in a business means that you're able to align both of your goals and aggregate your resources in order to achieve those goals. Again, there's this process of, is this a person that whose goals mine align with, and is that person, and does that person have the same level of motivation and desire as I do? In many ways, I counsel a lot of clients on this. If you're thinking of taking on a partner in your business that you've run for a very long time by yourself, you have to be very careful, because in many ways it is like a marriage, and it's something that when it goes bad, it can go really bad. And so it's again, the process of exploration, knowing someone well enough to know that their goals align with yours and their level of motivation, which is also very key. It's not just the goals, because I think everybody has the goal to make the business succeed, but if their level of motivation doesn't align with yours, one of the two of you or more will always be,
yep,
believe that they are putting more into the relationship or the business than you are.
Yep. So, okay. So the partnership, the spending time, what you said about being a solopreneur, working on a business for a long period of time, and then having somebody else come into business, that's a new angle for me. Recently, I moved on from an opportunity that I was working with. I'm tired of having partners, and I want to do it on my own. And I've done a lot on my own before, but I'm getting the sense that anybody I partner with needs to do like small little tests, and sort of like be in their general sphere for more than a year, while doing small kind of ways of working together to really, and it's so interesting because there's all these people that you could do business with, and then there's all the people that you should be doing business with, and your intuition and all these things, and you can get it wrong, and getting it wrong is really costly. I don't have a specific question here, but what's your take on what I just said? Any kind of things you think about, any suggestions that you have for me to think about this kind of new of getting into a business on my own, doing it on my own, and evaluating people over long periods of time?
I think that's exactly the way I view it. That one of the issues with being completely on your own is that it becomes very difficult to scale, to scale things upward. And that's where the aggregation of resources comes in. You have to have people, partners, others come together in order to scale. One of the things that a lot of people want is to develop some sort of generational wealth. The only way to develop generational wealth is to aggregate resources and grow beyond your own means. I, you know, it's funny. I talk a lot on the subject of the talent pipeline in accounting, and one of the things that I always talk about is you want to work towards something bigger than yourself, and you want to work for something bigger than yourself. That there are a lot of people that say that the younger generations don't have that desire. They just want, you know, they want a work-life balance, and which is great. I think that's a wonderful thing to, you know, it's why I have horses. It's why I live in the north of town as opposed to the center of town. And so I can have land and I can have that life. But one of the things that made that life possible is the fact that I worked extraordinarily hard in my 20s and 30s to build that life and to build the foundation for me to have this, and to build something larger than myself. I don't want any of my firms to go away when I am gone. I want them to continue to employ people. I want them to continue to provide an economic benefit to both Wyoming and the world at large. I want to leave something behind. And if that's what you want to do, then you're going to have to aggregate resources at some point. And that's what I've done. And I, the times I've regretted it with some of the people, but for the most part, I would change any of that.
Of all the partnerships, and don't be naming names or anything like that, but how did you figure out, it may have to do with gut or anything like that, but what have you learned about picking the right partner, whether it's a gut or intellectual exercise?
It is, a lot of it's gut, some of it's necessity, and some of it is that working with someone and matching energy levels, matching intellect, matching desires and motivations. I think right now the mix of partners that I have is wonderful, I don't know that it'll stay that way forever because people change and people have different things come up in their lives. But I know and these are people that I've worked with. You know, one of my partners just celebrated her 15th anniversary working with me.
That's great.
Another one will celebrate 15 years in October of this year, I think. And and one of my partners, I think, is incredible because she came to work as an intern, and we did not have a job open for her at the time, and she literally pushed me and harassed me until I was able to give her a job.
Cool.
Another one, talking about training people, she started out as my executive assistant, and she went back and got her degree in accounting and worked her way up the ladder. She just celebrated 15 years, and 4 years ago, I had to make her a partner because there was just no place else for her to go, and she had pushed me until I agreed with her. So some truly dynamic people that I have as partners right now, and I think, you know, we're gonna continue to conquer the world.
I have one. We'll take about 10 minutes left, and I have one question that's been popping up in my mind because I love talking to you over the past few years. I love getting into your world. I love understanding by Wyoming from a distance, and hopefully soon very physically. But I come from the West Coast. I come from California. I come from the Silicon Valley craziness that has sort of taken over the world. But as somebody who's in the technology world too, with the projects that you're working on, I'd love to hear your opinion of what's going on the coasts. And in the world of technology, the difference between your life and that world, and just like anything interesting that you find about the place that I come from.
Oh, you know, the coasts, I love them. I love, in particular, kind of the Southern California coast, anywhere from San Francisco down. I'm not someone that likes a lot of people. But, you know, just like Wyoming has its own natural beauty, I think California, no matter which way you go, whether it's Southern California or Northern California, Oregon, Washington, they're so spectacular. It's hard not to love them. I think it's very difficult to truly succeed there because of the cost of living, the high taxes, and all of that. But they are, you know, I'm not going to say anyone that chooses to live there and work there, I can't disagree with their decisions, because what they're doing is they are choosing what they're going to sacrifice in order to have that lifestyle. And you know, there are challenges. There are lots of challenges. I think California and Oregon taxes, in particular, are onerous. If I were the governor of California and the legislature, if I were king of California, I would generate more revenue through business and economic activity, and less through high levels of taxation, and approach things more in that direction. But, you know, again, those areas, I had a client whose daughter was she did internships in Australia on primitive farming techniques.
Wow.
And then bought a piece of land in Northern California that had no access, and you had to backpack in and out of.
Wow.
And basically created a home and a farm there. And then I believe my client said that she had then petition to get access to it. But, you know, those, you can't do that in every state. You can't create that sort of environment in every state. California happens to have some of the, whatever they needed to do it. I can't say bad things about those states. I can be critical of the way they are governed. But as long as someone goes into living there with their eyes wide open, I can't, you know, they're great places.
And that's the challenge I have with California is just like, I grew up there. It's, it's such a beautiful place and I love it so much. And that's also why I'm happy that I found this area in Argentina, in Buenos Aires and Brazil, not politically speaking, because the politics is actually worse here. But it's worse here because they made the same decisions that California and other states are making, are making now. They made those a long time ago. And the blowback from those decisions is now clear, and the people here have started to basically say enough, and they've elected a president who I personally find to be highly inspiring, and thinking very clearly about the nature of the problem, and is very honest with people, saying it's going to be really, really challenging to get out of the situation, but we're going to do it. And so I'm really optimistic about this place on the medium to long term. Pessimistic in the short term. I think it's gonna be really tough here. But that's on the political side. On the nature side and the beautiful side, it's like the opposite. It's like what California was in the 1960s and the 1970s. Buenos Aires as sort of like a Mediterranean climate. I still haven't been to the actual Mediterranean climates right next to the mountains in Mendoza and stuff like that, but I'm really excited to go down there. And then also Brazil, Florianopolis reminds me of that Southern California that you were talking about, like Santa Barbara. It reminds me of what I think Santa Barbara would be like in the 1960s and the 1970s, of like this place that you can afford as a middle-class person. That's just like absolutely epically beautiful. I'm curious, have you been following what Milei, have you followed it, what Javier Milei is doing in Argentina?
On a very tertiary level, I haven't really looked into any of the specifics at all of what they're doing.
It's going to be interesting. I think both you and my listeners might find it interesting. He represents something that I think is new, which hasn't been in the previous waves of what I in California was taught to call the alt-right and everything like that. There's something new there, and it's very interesting. It's like a more refined version of a lot of what's been going on, with a lot more intellectual integrity backing, in my opinion. Very, very interesting stuff. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. If my listeners were interested in what you're saying, how can they find out more about you and find out more about what you're doing?
They can look at, they can go to my website, I suppose. It's woefully outdated, and that's something that I don't pay enough attention to, but it's davidapope.com, davidapopecpa.com. My apologies. They can always email my office at info@dapcpa.org. And I'm happy to respond to folks that need more information, especially about Wyoming, especially about our crypto push here. And I'm always happy to talk about the horses.
I hope I can see them one day.
Oh, me too.
Yeah. Thanks, David.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Stuart Alsop III. Also, don't forget to subscribe on Spotify or iTunes for every weekly episode that I publish on Monday mornings. Hope you have a great day.